Begin like we normally do with meditation, grounding ourselves, settling our own inner spirit, opening our heart, being able to walk through the day, not only with our head and our thoughts, but open at the center of our being. And that's the purpose of always meditation. Two chants. Most of you know these chants, or at least heard them, or chanted them once, but they're easy to learn, and we'll follow along. The moment sweet Sophia, holy wisdom, caught my eye. She washed away my thoughts and became my heart's companion. So now I am her slave. My heart, my soul belongs to her, and they struggle daily to be with her. Wherever I look, it is her that I see. In winter, in spring, in summer and fall, she surrounds me. All wisdom comes from knowing her.
And that wisdom means knowing myself. Who am I really? What is my eternal source? What am I doing here in space and time? And where am I going? If we are not learning the answers to these questions, we have not been listening to her voice. And without her voice, what is the purpose of religion or piety and of reading all the holy books in the world? It is true, I am no Elijah or Elijah. I am no prophet, no master, no saint, and sometimes I have made a mess of things. And yet, like Elijah, however little I eat or I drink, still, I am always well fed by her. The whole universe has her love, her affection inside of it. And without wisdom's deep, deep love, faith hardens into stone. But since the fire of her love touches everything and everyone, it touches me. And it touches you. And it ripens us into our perfection. The completed man, the perfect woman, without which we are nothing. But with her love, her affection, we are welcomed into the single heart of divine love and into the perfect body of humanity. Oh, holy wisdom. Holy wisdom, you have caught my eye. Divine desire, lead me to the one that is higher than I. Holy Eros, divine desire, lead me to the one that is higher than I. Divine desire, lead me to the one that is higher than I. Holy Eros, divine desire, lead me to the one that is higher than I. Higher than I.
I would like to begin this morning where we ended last evening, which was to begin to explore the wisdom of Yaakov, the brother of Yeshua. Because this text is what we might call the practical wisdom of Jewish tradition, meaning how do we live in the world? This one, the one we're in, this interesting one. This one where we said last night at the end, it is quite clear that you cannot be on this planet and not experience suffering. It's inevitable. And there's no one who escapes it. Not one person. No matter how many gated communities we have or how many Xanaxes we take or whatever it is that we do to keep ourselves above the chaos of the world, the world is chaotic because by definition it is a world of opposites, where opposites sometimes are compatible and they complement and sometimes they clash, and we have those opposites inside of us, right? We have competing desires. So suffering is a part of the world, and the question is, and has always been, why? And we said last night, Buddhism and Jewish tradition focus on this very interesting issue that we suffer. And they dive down deep into the meaning of that. We're not studying Buddhism, but I have a whole group of Buddhist objects on the table and Hindu objects this morning. And they complement, you might say. They're not in contradiction to the Jewish world, but they're sort of like a yin and a yang. They have complementary ideas. And the Jewish world sees, as it unfolds into the Christian world, and then the Christian world unfolds into Islam, it sees that suffering is productive. It is positive. So I gave you last night this wonderful article, brand new article, just hot off the press, just published last week by David Brooks. What did you think when you read it? So what do you think?
I like the idea that it takes you deeper inside, that suffering takes you deeper inside yourself.
All right, so explain what that means.
Well, that until you suffer, you know, happiness is outside of us.
Yes, good.
But until you suffer, does it help you go inside and you figure out what's important to you, to make choices that you didn't even know you had, I guess, that I
Perfect.
Had.
Yeah. So we tend to, in the world of happiness, stay on the surface, you know, whatever makes us happy on the surface of things. But suffering just drives you deep down into yourself. Good point. Beautiful.
I loved the idea that, well, two things. First of all, I've in recent years been increasingly disturbed by using the word healing in relation to suffering. Because I don't know if we heal from great losses, but we change because suffering is transformative. And he speaks to that very, very beautifully. And I especially love the idea that suffering, when it's done well, is transmuted into holiness. And I thought that was just brilliant.
Okay, so that word is really important, and he dared to use it, that it creates a holy being. There's something about the product of that.
We can take something and turn it into something sacred.
Right, it's sacred. That's perfect. Okay.
Well, Joan has touched a bit upon what I observed. I'm glad he rescues happiness at the end and suggests that happiness, conventionally defined, is what he's talking about, because I see holiness and deep suffering as the deepest form of happiness.
Good. So it's interesting that what would seem incompatible, deep suffering, pain, and happiness, actually are complementary opposites in some fundamental way.
No, they're unified.
They're unified. That's right. Kent, and then.
Well, of course, I think this happiness and the suffering is really all encompassed in joy.
I love that
word.
I think
true joy,
yes,
is the understanding of suffering.
Good.
And it is the also the presence of deep happiness.
Good.
I don't like to shallow the definition of happiness.
Yes,
at all.
And so even the word happiness is deepened into joy.
Right.
And happiness can have a kind of surface meaning, but then it can have this deep meaning. And so suffering drives it, again, the way that Anna was speaking, drives it down into the depths of that.
I was going to say almost exactly what Kent just said. I think of it like, we are sensible beings, right? And so with surrender comes awareness. With awareness comes pain. And with the, and then somehow that is can be transmuted into joy. And I know you've heard me say this before, but my other teacher, the other person, I think comes closest to a mentor to me besides yourself, often talks about pain-filled joy and joy-filled pain.
Good.
Trying to capture that emotion.
Good.
Of sitting in whatever the situation
right.
is, even if it's your own flaws and addictions.
Right.
And instead of fighting it, being there with it and having that sort
Good.
Of a sensation.
Perfect. Perfect.
I think in addition to being driven down by the suffering, there's something beautiful that I saw in this the paragraph about feeling a call. It's like there's something within that calls us to a place mm-hmm. where we can deal with this suffering. There's a inner voice, an inner calling leading
okay.
us into the
So
call.
Wonder if, as this text suggests, it is the divine will to have us experience this. That's the calling into it. So the idea of have we been sent, called, voluntarily entered this realm in which we will encounter this very difficult but deepening experience. And so this text and this article basically are headed in the same direction. So I'll go to Jerry and then back to Joe and Tom.
Well, Rumi has a poem, and I don't know that word, but it says, bring it on, bring it on.
Yes, Rumi is not afraid.
No, it's that acceptance
right.
that you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's so important. And if we can't have that deep acceptance, we'll just wallow in the misery and the suffering.
Yeah. So listen to her words, deep acceptance. It's a stance toward. And again, this is you're echoing the text here. This deep wisdom is rooted in this very question of theodicy. It starts out with this very interesting Jewish focus on why are we in the world where we experience suffering, and this ability to accept is critical to this experience. We have to have that. Joe.
Many years ago, I taught a course for high-risk freshmen at the university, and shortly after the beginning of the course, we would have them write their life history, and it should have included statements of their values and what they wished for the future. Grading those, they were so shallow, they just set my teeth on edge, and my whole room used to clear out. But every so often, by the end of the first or the second page, there was a different quality, and I came to understand I'm going to get into this paper, and this would be somebody who has lost somebody close to them and dear to them. They weren't shallow. And in fact, that was inevitably the case.
Isn't that interesting?
It was such an illustration of how transformative it can be.
And so you have a certain age group in which the world looks like it's on their pillow and they're, you know, it's just a nice mint that has been placed by the manager of La Quinta and on your pillow. And you know, all you have to do is unwrap it and eat it, and that's the way the life's going to be. And then inevitably, they have the experience of suffering, and it changes everything. It changes everything. That's what creates wisdom. It was you. It was Tom. It was Beth. I don't know which one.
I had my hand up a little while ago.
Oh, I see. There's a trinity of hands.
It's all put
right. All right, so, yeah.
I was going to comment, if I can remember, I was going to comment on what Brandy said about...
Okay, well, you know, age has another problem, and it's that one. Okay, Beth.
You know, this is, it's still hard for me to see how suffering can be joyful. From my perspective, perhaps it's a matter of being in that place of acceptance, and having traveled through the transformative process, and when you take a look around and see life from a different perspective, out of that awareness, you have deeper appreciation, and there is a deeper vessel within you
to hold it
and to have
this
appreciation.
Good. Great. See, we're talking from, we've walked on the planet a ways, y'all. And this means we're not talking theoretically. We're talking about what we've learned about this experience. So we're talking from a wisdom perspective. We don't have this conversation very often until, you know, we're in a group like this. But Tom, and then Richard.
It's similar to what Bev said. I do have a hard time being joyful about suffering. But I was struck in David Brooks' article about how the necessity of it, that it's only in that place of suffering that we are more in tune with our own state and perhaps become more sensitive to the suffering of others, that it's...
Absolutely.
So I can develop a better attitude towards suffering, realizing there's some good that can come out of this.
Exactly. You have empathy. You have deep understanding of another human being, and you, without that, you wouldn't have it. You just would not have it. You couldn't relate.
It's the vehicle to get there.
It is. So it creates, and this is another word we're going to come back to over and over again in this text, right relationship to things. Mm-hmm. What's the right relationship to things?
I like how he talks about smashing through the bottom floor.
Yeah, isn't that a good image? Yeah. You go drop down and smash through that one, and drop down again and smash through that one. Richard.
These thoughts, I mean, in my own personal experience, part of the suffering that I experience, I have two thoughts, but one of them is when I'm out of alignment or as you're moving from this dualistic perspective to oneness, when I get way off the railroad track, it's suffering.
Yeah.
But it's suffering because I'm putting it together. It wasn't sent.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that because I'm real slow, I get sent suffering over and over and over.
Well, good. We're glad you get that. The rest of us are spared, thank God. So, yes, dear baby Jesus, you send it to Richard.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
One thought, something that's always, that's been valuable to me for a long time is Paul Tillich's one sermon there about grace, and it's you are accepted. And he indicates that when we are at the depths, college student I knew once said the worthless uglies.
Screaming
at the depths, then we are struck
by grace.
and good. Know that you are accepted.
Good.
We don't have to accept ourselves.
Yeah.
We don't have to know a damn thing.
Right.
We just are struck.
Good.
Perfect. By that. But it's, I guess I have to be in the worthless uglies first.
Yeah.
To get it.
Yeah.
And then it's really some good news.
Yeah.
That good. Just exactly with my worthless uglies, I'm accepted.
That's perfect. Because that is the spot in which it's possible to receive this. Without that spot, you can't receive this kind of divine unloading, unfolding. So there is that. David.
I think, too, when you're with someone who's being really honest and authentic and they're sharing their experience, it's really quite beautiful, and it just changes, for me anyway, it would just change my whole perspective. In some way, be transcendent, because it's just like opening up and getting a much broader picture of
good.
Life and not being so narrow.
Yeah. Okay. So it not only breaks through the bottom floor, it just collapses the walls
yes.
that you may have erected to the world, and suddenly, you know, you don't know where you end and another person begins in a certain way. That's in this text too. Okay. Diana and then Beth.
I think the thing that strikes me is that what suffering does is it breaks down the ego. The ego. So up until the time I am involved in great suffering, I think I'm in charge and I can manage all this, and you know, I'm in charge of my joy and my happiness. And when I hit that wall, it's like, hello.
That's right.
There's something bigger than yourself.
Good. So the deconstruction of the ego. It's a very interesting idea that the ego that we need so badly to be in this world actually inevitably has to be deconstructed in order for a new reconstruction. So deconstruction, reconstruction are a part of this process. You have one, you have to have one, it is part of what it means to be a human, and then it has to be deconstructed in order to reach a self that is higher than I, which we just chanted. Beth.
Yeah, and actually my comment builds on Diana's point, and that is when we are fully aware that we're not in control, you know, the grace that we feel is often through circumstance that is gift and beyond our control. So we're able, maybe in the moment, and maybe with hindsight, to look back and see how there was gift all along.
Yeah. So you have to get down the road quite a ways to be able to look back. And to look back is then to put the pieces together.
And sometimes those pieces are right there with you.
Yeah, but you might not see how they connect right at the moment.
I just wanted to take this to another tradition briefly.
Okay.
I know that in every tradition you have this deepening.
You do.
I call this, as I read the Brooks article, my Persephone experience.
Ah, so the Greek mythological.
Yeah, well, this is pre-Zeus.
Uh-huh.
I'm not talking about those sky gods that just yeah. disrupted everything. I'm
yes.
talking about the pre
so
culture.
Matriarchal.
And indeed, you find in that tradition
yeah.
dream chambers.
Yes.
And
yeah.
you find behind walls. If you go to Malta, I'm sure this culture was kicked in the head by this idea, because they have double walls and you speak through a hole in the wall to the counselor. It's designed to help you heal.
Good.
And I just see in that culture, and that's the Greek culture
yeah.
I keep talking about.
Yeah, yeah. There's
I throw away Zeus.
Different
he's crazy.
Greek. Really? Oh. You mean schizophrenic?
Yeah.
So.
I'm talking about Beth's experience of grace. When I was a very young woman, before I had a child, before I had any suffering in my life to speak of, I used to worry about, you know, was it going to take me totally around the bend? Was it, you know, was I going to be able to tolerate it? How would I be able to get through it when it came into my life? And it just was a terrifying thought. And then, of course, at a certain time, it did. And there was a horrible medical crisis involving one of my children. And I was a stuffer inner of feelings and never wept, et cetera, et cetera. And that crisis brought me to tears, not as often as it should have, but again and again and again. And I learned the grace of tears. And I learned that that was how I was going to get through it, you know, the softening, the humanity-making-ness of tears.
Good.
And it was great. Such a wonderful experience to have that.
Well, this illustrates something which appeared in the Enlightenment tradition of Jewish evolution. And that was the praxis of wisdom, the sapiential aspect. There was the prophetic, there was the mystical, and then right in the middle was this sapiential, this wisdom practice. So we're talking about learning wisdom as a result of this inevitable experience of suffering. And you all have spoken to it beautifully, masterfully. Why? Because it's not theoretical. You know it as a result of your own experience. So that is what emerges, these three strands of the evolution of Jewish life and just this hard-won, fiery experience of being in the world as a Jewish tradition and having to meet it over and over again, eventually creates a prophetic voice, Micah 6:9 that we talked about last night, a mystical deepening experience of the divine as the divine beloved, ascending and descending, and then this practical way of being in the world. And so this text that we're dealing with, the text of James, Yaakov, is in fact that treasure. It's a treasure trove out of this tradition of which you're speaking. So to bring this to a kind of conclusion so that we can move forward, I would like for someone to read the first full paragraph, chapter 1, verses 2 through 8. Just read it out loud as clearly as you can so that we can all hear it. And I have a couple more things to do before we leave this topic to move forward.
My brothers and sisters, count it a great joy when trials and tribulations befall you.
See the word joy?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you must bear up under the suffering. Know this, that these trials are tests of your faithfulness. They produce in you the capacity for perseverance and patient endurance. And when these have been perfected, you will be a whole and complete being, lacking in nothing. But if any of you are lacking wisdom, then ask God, and it will be granted to you. For God is generous and self-giving, and imparts to all ungrudgingly and without reserve. But ask trustingly, without hesitation or doubt. For those who are doubtful are like ocean waves driven and tossed about by the winds. Do not imagine that they are capable of receiving anything. For an individual with a divided heart is inherently unstable.
It's packed with information, packed with wisdom, packed with insight, packed with images of all sorts of things. And what would you say if you just took this paragraph as a whole? What's the goal of suffering according to this paragraph?
Come whole and complete.
Ah, perfect. I programmed that into David last night.
And what did David say? I didn't.
Yeah, a whole and complete being, lacking nothing.
A unified being.
The whole purpose of experience is to create a whole and complete being. Here is a Jewish image of a whole and complete being.
Holiness, right?
Exactly. It would indeed do that. So this image, again, becomes really important. Here is, if you can see it faintly in the background, an undivided heart. So this end of the paragraph says, a person with a divided heart is unstable, but a person with a unified heart, by implication, is someone who has found stability. Stability allows, or is the result of, a person becoming a whole and complete being. But without this experience, we do not become whole. We do not become complete. Isn't that weird? That it would take the fires of suffering, the alchemy of suffering, to create a whole and complete being. And the way that we might think of this is that you have the ascending triangle being a representative of the human experience. And so let's just put on that, according to this paragraph, there's three basic qualities that are produced by suffering, according to James's wisdom. Tell me what they are.
Faithfulness.
Ah, faithfulness.
Perseverance.
Perseverance.
And patience.
And patient what?
Endurance.
Patient endurance. Okay. Three qualities that the soul would not have without this experience. Without this experience, there would not be faithfulness, whatever that means. There would not be perseverance, whatever that means. And patient endurance, whatever that means. So what is created in the soul, according to this tradition, is that the inevitable product are qualities in the soul which would not be there without it. So let's think about faithfulness. We think about, we say, that dog is so faithful. What does that mean?
Unconditional love.
Yeah, that's a good.
Consistent.
Yeah, that dog just always is there when you whistle. Very forgiving. There's a lot of things involved in the word faithfulness. It's not just having faith, but we say this somebody is faithful, loyal, always there, unconditional love. So many things are packed into that idea of that quality. That quality just dense with things in it. Okay? And you can meditate on this image of faithfulness as being maybe the apex of this pyramid. And then you have this idea of perseverance. What does that mean?
You don't give up.
You don't give up. How easy it is when you're first on this journey in the world. A little bit of challenge out of the box. Oh, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm giving up. And that is such a youthful, young people tend to get a little bit of trouble and they're out of there. They give up.
It's almost like leading into or laboring.
Yeah, just not giving up.
Yeah.
Not giving up. And that's the sign of an older soul. That's a sign of a soul that's journeyed against the wind. And you have to have wind to get that quality. You have to have the challenge of the world against you to develop perseverance. Otherwise, you would not. You think, I don't know how many times in different circumstances you or I have had this experience where you hit the wall and you go, okay, I either give up or I push through it. Mm-hmm. And you push through it and it's like the bottom drop, that image that David Brooks used. You push through to the other side and you go, oh, there is more. There is more. I didn't know I had these reserves. I didn't know that I could push beyond that wall. That's perseverance. Patient endurance.
I think it's kind of a surrender where you're accepting, okay, I want this to be, part of me wants it to be done with. Let's get this over with. But no, patient endurance is It unfolds. Good.
It has something to do with time. It has something to do with time. Because what we want is an answer real quick. And this is two things. And you said it, Alicia, you said about the possibility of being accepting over a long period of time. You stay open and accepting, and you do it. You don't close that door. We do it with kids as they grow. We do it with family members, but we tend to be impatient about a lot of other things, even ourselves. So patiently enduring, going, we don't learn this any other way. We don't develop that quality in any other way. Beth.
The word obedient came to me, and then as I thought about it, there's also, it's a loving obedience. I don't know other words to put to it.
Yeah.
But it's not out of fear.
It's not out of fear. That's right. There's another quality. It's he puts the word joy at the top of this whole paragraph. Joyful. And it doesn't say that you're going to be. You count it a great joy. In your ledger book, this is full of, I hate this. But you count it, you mark it up as joy. That's almost like saying in the ledger, I'm going to write the word joy, but it sure doesn't feel like that right now.
In that beginning sentence, he's starting with a very long perspective.
He is, long Jewish perspective.
Well, and just to count this, to do exactly what he's saying, you would have already had to do what's at the bottom.
Yeah, you would have to have done it.
That's what I mean by long perspective.
Yeah.
Personally, you would have to
And you'd have to know that your soul is basically unstable.
Yeah, so when that next wave of suffering comes along, it's still going to hurt like blades.
Yeah, that's right.
But it would be a deepening.
You would know that these qualities are being produced.
Yeah.
And that the whole reason you're on the planet is the creation of these.
Which so you wouldn't probably
You wouldn't get any other way.
Yeah,
there's nowhere in the universe.
That, the first wave along.
No, you would not get this in any other part of the universe other than being in space-time.
I just had another image. I mean, it's women experience this in childhood.
Good point.
So
it's going to come
Sophia
up in this text.
Yeah.
Exactly. Good for you. Tom.
It seems like there's an element of this that's really trust. That waiting will bring something
better. And in fact, this is hesitation and doubt is the opposite of trust. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trusting the universe at all. I'm not trusting this is just bullshit. I want out of here. This, I'm going to stop this
up.
As fast
that's
as
giving up.
Yeah, giving up. See, and this is, that is the opposite of this, this trusting state. Okay, it doesn't look... It's really hard. I have to push really hard against this, but it's producing. I'm trusting this process. I'm trusting this process.
You have to ask trustingly.
Yes, that's right. And now we're going to get to the other triangle here in just a minute, and that's really important, Kent.
Well, I see it too. It's this journey of giving up the idea that you're in control of everything.
Yes, exactly. Because that's the trust issue. I'm obviously not in control.
Yeah.
We're talking about a kind of a trauma.
Yes.
Trauma
that goes on.
The world is traumatic.
And I immediately brace against that idea of trauma.
Right.
For myself or for anybody else. But there's a less traumatic way, a less hurtful way. Of getting a hold of this idea that I've been through some exercises. One is a life history. What that does is every 10, 5, so many years in your life, wherever you were, you write down where you were, what you were doing, what kinds of things were going on. Do that for for 5 years.
And see what
it looked like.
Good.
And it draws this stuff out.
It does. And it's the long-term view. So let's look at this. Now, keep this with you, this diagram, and you're going to add to it as we go forward. Because as we go forward, the definition of the what is being created at each one of these points in the ascending triangle meets the descending triangle of the divine. So if you said the ascending triangle is the human meeting, the descending triangle of the divine, those are going to be defined and redefined over and over again. In this text, you're going to add new words to each point. So in this paragraph, the opening paragraph of wisdom, how is the divine defined? Which is where Cindy was going.
Before you go there, so faithfulness is at the top.
Well, I don't know.
Well, it's in the triangle. Uh-huh. Yeah. And patient endurance is the PE. And what's the P?
The P.
Perseverance.
Oh, okay. I had those. Okay.
Yeah. Perseverance.
Okay, got it.
And then you get a complete being. That's the complete being. You cannot be complete without the divine. But you won't accept the divine until you're deep in the middle of the suffering. You will tend to not need the divine. You will say, well, I'm totally self-sufficient. But it's that point, and I think Nancy said, a vulnerability where grace descends. And this is the descending triangle. And that's when you start to do what it says. Ask wisdom. So there's the spot of vulnerability. That's when, okay, then the divine grace can flow. And I read that poem last night we chanted, the chant, if the beloved one causes you to weep, know that you will laugh again and joy someday. And this idea that this opens up the flowing. So how does Yaakov describe the divine? It's not the standard definition, by the way.
Generous.
Oh, generous. We thought God was jealous. Remember how the Old Testament, in parts of it, described God as being jealous, having a bad hernia, and not being able to. Okay, jealous, stingy, not willing, only when you do the right thing.
Judgmental.
James stands it on its head. On its head.
It imparts to all ungrudgingly.
Ungrudgingly. Oh, I thought God held a grudge. You pissed me off. I'm going to remember it forever.
Self-giving.
Self-giving. Generous, self-giving, and gives to all ungrudgingly. Okay, those are just the beginning definitions of God. And the conventional view of God in the Jewish world was the opposite of that. Now we're used to these ideas more now, but back then, no. The way God was described was the way Zeus was described. This tyrant on the mountain who was pissed off all the time, held a grudge, didn't like you, and would burn you forever if God got a chance. So this is the opposite. This is the meeting on in the inside of a complete being. A complete being starts to know this. And a complete being then is one in which this forms a stable heart. So this then begins to describe the wisdom of Yaakov as a deep sapiential tradition. Sheila.
One might see the first quality of God as testing.
I think that's right.
Maybe God is not the actor in the testing, but circumstances.
Okay. So this is a very astute observation of Sheila's, mm-hmm. that you have to be able to say, as we said last night, that the divine has either sent us or set it up so that we enter the laboratory of space and time. Mm-hmm. And that is a setup. So God is deliberately setting up a lab space and saying to the students, all right, go in there and we're going to try some things out. And you know, you can study chemistry, but until you have a lab, it's all theoretical and in your head or on a piece of paper. But you need to see how sulfur will catch fire, or you need to see how potassium permanganate, when it's dropped on a sugar and glycerin will burst into, you know, whatever it does. It's amazing. But, you know, if I told you about it, potassium permanganate, glycerin, and sugar has this amazing effect. You say, oh, yeah, blah, 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 blah. You know, you're just talking. But then if you see it, you just go, oh, my God, that's unbelievable. Well, you had to have the lab to make you see it. So this is a lab. It's a setup. We're in the laboratory. And it's creating these qualities. And we're now accepting these qualities. That for the divine to be generous, we have to have an open heart, an accepting heart, and one that is trustful in this circumstance.
So the seeing the result of the experiment, which is different from hearing about it.
And doing it
you
yourself.
Am I hearing you say, to experience, you have to come here to experience grace?
You do. You would not know what grace is until you experience suffering. You wouldn't know. It would just be a word in a book. It would just be an abstract idea. None of this is abstract now. This is practical. We have gone to the laboratory. We have been in for 70, 80, 90, 100 years in this laboratory, and we have been experimenting. And we are now the recipients. That's why you were able to so eloquently talk about what this experience of suffering was, because it was not a book study. It was your heart study, and you knew. And therefore, you have these qualities embedded inside of you. That's what the way this text starts out. You won't get this until you know the way the world works. So that's the third point in the big square. Where did you come from? Who are you? Where did you come from? What are you doing on this planet? This is the answer.
Testing.
Yes, this is testing time. This is laboratory time. It's a setup.
It's pretty amazing too. He saw his brother crucified.
Yeah.
And no telling what other horrible thing.
Oh yeah.
And he must have known for him to speak out and to become a leader.
Yes.
The same thing could have happened to him.
Yeah, and he was going, he was, as we say in Texas, he was fixing to have this same thing happen to him. And he was stoned to death in 62 A.D. In Jerusalem, probably in the temple. So,
I can understand how the divided heart is unstable. I'm not so clear about the divided heart not being able to receive, unless, I guess my only answer in my head is that if it's divided, it's turned away, and if it's turned away, then it's not open to receive.
I think the divided heart might have to do with this idea of completeness. Okay. It's an incomplete heart. Or let's say only one triangle exists.
It's not a stout.
Yours.
It's not stable.
It's not stable. And instability is the way he's sort of describing it. So, and I have a series of questions I've been thinking about. What's the difference between a complete being and a stable being? Are they the same thing? Are they different? And it's something I've been meditating on. You know, what are those two things? Are they complementary opposites? How do they work together? What is stability and completeness? But let's say you split those triangles, and God by definition was up there, but you didn't have any deep experience. This is a united heart, meaning this is one of the fundamental, I think, ideas of Jesus, and we're going to go there right now. Fundamental idea of Jesus is a unified heart, meaning God's heart and your heart are not separated. Your heart and God's heart are united. See that? If your heart and the divine heart are separated, then you have a divided heart. Because God's heart is your heart. But if you're not united to the divine, and you don't sense your own deep union, oneness with the divine heart, there's not really two hearts. But if you have it, well, and you talk to people about their relationship with God or the divine reality, and they basically describe God as somewhere else, but not with them. they haven't really gotten to know God. They haven't gotten to know this as an inner experience. But when the two realities meet and you suddenly realize, oh, we've always been the same heart and we're not divided. That's an awakening. So the awakening to the unified heart is a very precise way of describing something that Jesus obviously learned. So we'll visit this again, because this idea, I think, is very deep in the teachings of Jesus, but we've been talking about other things and not so much that. We need to really focus down on what he saw. And this is, I think, what he saw.
But is it our awakening to the idea? So it's always been a united heart.
True.
We just didn't know it.
Exactly.
Until you wake up to it.
Exactly.
So it's not like it wasn't there and then it becomes that. It was there to begin with.
How to talk about this is very mysterious.
Yeah.
From the perspective of when you don't know it, it feels as though
it doesn't exist.
Right. And
but it actually exists. You just aren't aware of it.
Right. You haven't awakened to it. Right. So if I'm asleep in this room and I'm dreaming of something, I'm up dreaming, and this bell is sitting there in the room, but I'm dreaming of, you know, being at McDonald's eating a hamburger, and you say, well, where's the bell? It doesn't exist.
Mm.
It's this hamburger, you know, but it's sitting there all the time. So I awaken, I go, oh, wait a minute, wait, it's been here all the time. I didn't know. Something like that.
The awakening.
Yeah.
The enlightenment.
Okay.
Let's speak to the word stable a moment.
Good.
When we are fully awakened and we don't regress back like we do in our normal, like I do at this point, but if I reach full enlightenment, I think that's what a stable heart would be more used. But until then, I'm still in this growth phase. And if it's too stable, I never grow.
Good. So instability pushes you, as David Brooks would say, down through the layers of your own soul. Maybe it just keeps busting through. Yeah.
I would always see, you know, I used to have a lot of confusion about this. Still do, I guess. But I mean, the upward going triangle, that's the stable triangle right there. Right? Right? Mm-hmm. It's flat on the earth. Right? I mean, whereas the downward one, that's where all the tension and energy, chaos, all of it's coming from.
This is a great meditation piece, and I think the image might even be, I forget the geometric term, but where you have two pyramids, either three-sided or four-sided or five-sided mm-hmm. pyramids. Yeah, and the two are two solids meeting, and then you get this, it's a star formation. Mm-hmm. It's a brilliant star formation, and that's probably the correct image, and then they come together, and then you have real stability, and you have brilliance.
Yeah.
You have light.
Well, yeah, because your points are all.
Yeah.
Essentially a ball.
Yeah, exactly.
It's essentially a ball.
And this bursts into light. So that's the whole idea. This becomes not only reflective, but it becomes a source. It becomes a radiance.
I get the image of that triangle being on top and the divine on the bottom, kind of like a triangle. And then as you experience something, that comes together.
Good.
Or that would be awakening, would be bringing that top triangle down.
Good.
Right.
Into
good. So this is a mandala, you guys. This is a mandala, meaning you're supposed to do what we're just doing. You're supposed to image it and imagine it this way and that way. Imagine it turning. Imagine it solid, imagine it in all the ways you possibly can imagine it. That's the way a mandala works. You're working with a mandala.
Yeah, I have one more image. Which way is your light pointing at?
Oh, good, 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 good.
Heavenly or earthly?
Yeah. And when you're...
Or elsewhere, yeah.
And when you're tracking through time, which of those points are you tracking with? Which do you typically use? Here's another one, just for the fun of it. This usually stands for intellect, emotion, and will. Something like that. I'm not putting these other qualities in those points, but some people track with their intellect, some people track with their emotions, and some people track with their will. They track through space-time that way, and they're headed out that corner with that tracking. So these are just, again, images of this mandala. It's really helpful to do that. Just keep doing it.